Palestinian resistance fighters in Gaza fire a barrage of missiles at Tel Aviv and its suburbs in response to the Israeli genocide in the coastal territory. Iraq's Islamic resistance targets Israeli positions in Syria's occupied Golan Heights as well as the Umm Rashrash port in occupied Palestine in support of Gaza. And a senior Hezbollah official warns Israel that attacks on its military sites will only stop when the regime's onslaught on Gaza ends. Thank you for joining us. In today's top story, the military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has targeted Tel Aviv and its suburbs in response to Israel's deadly onslaught on Gaza. The Al-Qassam brigades launched a barrage of rockets, with Israeli sources reporting failed interception of the projectiles. The regime's ambulances were also reportedly dispatched to the damaged sites. The launch of the rockets came as Israeli airstrikes and shelling claim over 150 more lives across Gaza in the past 24 hours. The regime's latest attacks hit residential buildings in Khan Yunis. The southern city has also been witnessing fierce clashes between resistance fighters and Israeli forces over the past several days. A number of Palestinians were also killed in central Gaza, where Israeli warplanes struck several refugee camps. The genocidal war on the besieged strip is now in its 87th day. Nearly 3 months of Israeli fierce bombing has left many Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip displaced and without basic supplies. Our correspondent in Gaza has talked to some people as they explain their desperate situation. Let's take a listen.
The situation is indescribable. We are subjected to an unprecedented systematic starvation. Our children are dying because of hunger. We have no access to humanitarian supplies. We only hear about them. We don't have water to drink or even to go to the bathroom. And the water, if it was available, is undrinkable. We don't even have gas to make food. It's miserable.
Our conditions are so dire. We have no food, no water. We haven't received any supplies yet. We are 15 individuals living in this small tent, having no blankets, covers, or clothes. Our children are suffering as they need to eat. The only thing we get is some canned food. I don't know what we're supposed to do with two or three pieces of canned bean or meat.
The circumstances are so difficult and unprecedented. I have 13 children and we all live in this tiny tent, as you can see, which shouldn't even be used by a human being because it's like a small agricultural warehouse, but there are no choices and we have no options. Our situation is tragic, particularly when it comes to having access to food or water.
I fled my house in northern Gaza Strip to Al-Maghazi refugee camp in the central area, and after heavy bombings I was injured, as you can see. Then I was forced to leave and come to Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital here. I don't have a place to sleep. We barely find food to eat. I was compelled to exchange a meat can with a couple of loaves to eat. It's so difficult.
We're originally from Al-Shati refugee camp in Gaza City. We are four families, my married daughters and me. We are 22 individuals living inside this narrow tent. It's tiny and overcrowded. Our situation is disastrous. We don't have food, we don't have water, and above all of that, we haven't received any real supplies. Our babies need diapers and we don't know how to get them.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas condemns an Israeli official's remark about the forced displacement of Palestinians from Gaza. Hamas described as a vile mockery and a war crime the comment made by the far-right Israeli finance minister. Bezalel Smotrich on Sunday called for the immigration of around 2 million Palestinians from the besieged strip to other countries so that only 1 to 200,000 will remain there. He also said Israeli settlers should come to Gaza after the end of the regime's onslaught. In response, Hamas vowed that people of Gaza will stand firm and steadfast against efforts to displace them from their own land. The Palestinian resistance movement also once again urged the international community to take effective measures to stop Israel's crimes. The Islamic resistance in Iraq says it has carried out fresh attacks against Israeli positions in response to the regime's ongoing air and artillery strikes on Gaza. The resistance group said it targeted a military site in Syria's occupied Golan Heights. It has also attacked a target in the city of Omar Rashrash, also known as Eilat, in the southern part of the occupied Palestine. This is not the first time Iraq-based resistance groups hit Eilat. Since October the 7th, they have also carried out a number of drone and missile attacks on U.S. bases in the region. They believe Washington is complicit in Tel Aviv regime's onslaught on Gaza and its killing of tens of thousands of civilians. A senior official with Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says attacks on Israeli positions across the southern Lebanese borders will end only if the regime ends its onslaught against Palestinians in Gaza. Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasem says Israel's efforts to restore peace to the north of the occupied Palestinian territories will be in vain unless attacks on civilians in Gaza stop completely. The cleric warned that Israel's refusal to end the war in Gaza would lead to a further escalation in clashes with Hezbollah. The comments came after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the regime will do whatever it takes to restore calm to the northern occupied Palestine, where settlers have either been displaced or live in constant fear of missile attacks by Hezbollah. As just mentioned, the situation remains volatile along Lebanon's southern border, with the resistance movement Hezbollah and Israel continuing to exchange fire. Earlier, our correspondent had this update from southern Lebanon.
Well, today in the early hours of the morning, we woke up to the Israeli shelling in the towns of Kfar Kila and also in the area of Mahamas, which is right behind us on this side. Of course, the shelling did not stop. There were also a lot of airstrikes. And the village of Ramya, in addition to the drone attacks against the town of Labuni, which is near the Nakura area on the western side of the coast. Of course, the Israelis continued their attacks, in addition to the fact that you have drones and surveillance and reconnaissance planes hovering over our heads on an hourly basis, in addition to the fact that we always see the fighter jets also in Lebanese airspace. Now, of course, Hezbollah did also launch several operations yesterday, the most significant of which was a drone attack against the barracks of Ramta. Now, today, their operation was conducted in the area of Hanita, and that was right after we heard from Israeli media reports that the sirens sounded in the western side of the Galilee. Usually we get an insight basically on whether there were Israeli resistance operations. After we know that there are sirens that sounded, the sirens usually go off whenever there are any missiles that are launched from the Lebanese side. And this is one of the issues that we have seen in Israeli media continuously. It seems that they are always in a tense situation. There are sirens are always sounding sometimes. Even small issues, sometimes there's no missiles, but they still do hear those sirens. But today we know that those sirens meant that there was a Hezbollah operation. It was in the barracks of Hanita specifically.
Yemen's armed forces have vowed that the U.S. will pay the price for its deadly attack on Yemeni boats in the Red Sea. The spokesman for the Yemeni armed forces said U.S. movements in the Red Sea cannot prevent Yemen from carrying out its religious, moral, and humanitarian duty in support of Palestinians. Yahya Sari also called on other countries to avoid involvement in what he called the dangerous U.S. project, warning of negative repercussions. At least 10 Yemenis were killed in a U.S. attack on three Yemeni boats in the Red Sea. The U.S. says its helicopters shot at the vessels trying to attack Singapore-flagged vessel Hangzhou. Sari said the ship was heading to Israeli ports and was successfully targeted with appropriate naval missiles. Activist and political commentator Hossein Al-Bukhaiti joined us earlier from Sana'a. He believes the United States has made the biggest mistake in targeting Yemeni vessels in the Red Sea. Let's take a listen.
And I'm sure that the United States, actually, they have done one of their biggest mistake, because who is in control of the sea is the one who are in control in the land, and this is the Yemeni army. And if we see that the United States has actually formed the so-called prosperity guardian, is actually the genocide guardian. Just imagine, Yemeni army have targeted many ships, as your correspondent in Sana'a have said, not a single casualty. They were really, really careful. They just want to stop those ships linked to Israel to lift the blockade against Palestinian. And United States, actually, they want the opposite. They will put all their military in position. They will put all their interest in the region in danger just to lift the blockade against Israel, because it has actually affected the Zionist state economy very, very bad, according to many international report. And the United States now should actually expect that if this attack has taken place and they have killed some of Yemeni personnel, Yemeni Navy personnel, this means a clear declaration of war against Yemen. And United States actually should not expect that Yemen will let them attack our country or try to stop those attack against Israeli ship or launch an attack against Yemen from their bases in many countries like Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Qatar, or United Arab Emirates.
Iran's foreign minister has condemned the silence of some Western governments over Israel's crimes against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. In a phone call with his UK counterpart, Hossein Amir Abdullahian slammed the double standards of some Western countries and also the US. He noted that Israel is permitted to slaughter Palestinians and set the whole world region on fire, while stopping an Israeli ship in the Red Sea is considered a threat to global economy. Amir Abdullahian also warned of a strong response to any Israeli threats against Iran. For his part, David Cameron called on Iran to try to prevent the expansion of the war in the region. The Iranian president has in separate messages congratulated the heads of Christian states and their citizens on the arrival of the Christian New Year. Ebrahim Raisi also wished all people around the world a year full of peace and health. In the meantime, the president noted that one of the most important crises gripping the human community today is the massacre of innocent Palestinians in Gaza by the Israeli regime. He expressed hope that international circles will, in cooperation with world leaders, take immediate action to stop the Israeli crimes, uproot tyranny and the desire for domination, and establish lasting peace and security across the globe. The Christian community in Pakistan has held special prayers for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza after they dedicated this year's Christmas celebrations to the oppressed people of Palestine. Press TV's correspondent Nasser Kazmi has more in this report.
In a poignant display of solidarity, Christians residing in Pakistan have opted to hold traditional Christmas celebrations with simplicity due to Israel's ongoing onslaught in Gaza. Their decision is a symbolic gesture of empathy and concern for relentless challenges faced by the people of Gaza during this festive season.
The message of Jesus Christ was the message of peace and security. We desire peace in Palestine. On this Christmas, our hearts are heavy, and we feel compelled to express our concerns for our brothers and sisters in Gaza.
Pastors from various Christian communities across Pakistan gathered in the capital city Islamabad on Sunday for a special joint prayer meeting to appeal for a ceasefire in Gaza.
In the spirit of Christmas, we gather here to raise our voices in prayer for the innocent lives affected by the conflict in Gaza. Our prayers are with the people of Palestine, and we stand united in our plea for a ceasefire and lasting peace.
Meanwhile, a diverse gathering of people also expressed solidarity with the oppressed people of Gaza through the display of vibrant balloons, each carefully adorned with messages of solidarity and support.
The situation of Gaza is extremely distressing. It is genocide, it is violence, and it is extreme power play in a region that does not deserve this at all.
Ceasefire now!
Demanding an immediate ceasefire, the individuals of all ages called on the world to halt the ongoing genocide of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Christians in Pakistan are using this Christmas to advocate for peace in Gaza rather than engaging in traditional celebrations. The gesture underscores that humanity is not confined by religious or national boundaries, but it is all about showing compassion for the people in distress. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Her rally has been held in the largest Palestinian refugee camp in Syria near Damascus in support of the people and resistance in Palestine. Our correspondent Ibrahim Wahdi reports from Damascus.
In response to the call of the Free Palestine Movement, massive crowds gathered in the Yarmouk refugee camp near Damascus to show their confidence in the strength and determination of the resistance in Gaza, confirming that the Al-Aqsa Flood operation is a fateful battle that ignited hope in their hearts, as it brings them closer to the defeat of the Israeli occupation and their return to their homeland.
We are here to support people in the Gaza Strip and voice our unconditional support to the resistance groups. After nearly 3 months of fighting, it's clear that the Zionist regime is facing defeat. The Al-Aqsa Flood operation revealed that Israel's collapse is imminent.
The Israeli occupation politically has nothing now, military has nothing now, security has nothing, economy has nothing, and we also tell the world that October 7th is the gate for the liberation of the whole Palestine, from the river to the sea.
Participants confirmed that the excess of resistance embraces the Palestinian struggle and supports all resistance factions, including the Al-Qassam Brigades and Al-Quds Brigades. They expressed their anger at the Israeli atrocities against the people of Gaza, emphasizing their adherence to their right of return and liberating Al-Quds.
Syrians and Palestinians have shown their absolute faith in the victory of the Resistance Front and Al-Aqsa Front operation, not only as a path to liberate the occupied lands, but also as inspiration for the generations to come. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
And with that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for being with us. Take care and bye-bye.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
A soldier who fights for his country. On the fourth anniversary of the martyrdom of the top IRGC general, Qasem Soleimani, we broadcast a three-part series to introduce this well-known Iranian general to a wider public. In this program, the first of this three-part series, we look at Qasem Soleimani's childhood and upbringing. Please stay with us. His family was not rich and well-off, and he came from a modest background. But nonetheless, Britain's Guardian newspaper refers to him as Iran's sword in the West, and the most cunning and astute military general in West Asia. According to the Guardian, he's a man of few words, but he has the ability to scupper and ruin every US plan and operation in the West Asia region. Mainstream Western media referred to him as a shadowy commander. But in his last will and testament, Qasem Soleimani insisted that simple inscription, Iran's soldier Qasem Soleimani, on his tombstone was all that he wanted. How an impoverished child and simple construction laborer rose to become the most influential military commander in the West Asia region and the second most powerful man within the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, is the subject of this program. Many are keen to learn more about this top charismatic Iranian general, whose legendary courage and perspicacity helped him rise quickly in military rank, eventually becoming the most influential military and political figure in the West Asia region. His courage, often striking fear in the enemy, has its roots in his childhood upbringing. Qasem Soleimani was born on 21st of March 1956 in the village of Qanat Malek, close to the town of Rabur in Kerman province in southeastern Iran. He was born into a poor but religious family and had a religious upbringing. In his memoirs, he gives an account of his childhood, personal life and experiences. He recounts, "I loved the arrival of the spring season. Winter months were particularly austere. All I had to wear was a synthetic nylon shirt, which we called wash and wear. And throughout winter months, I used to wear this shirt with nothing over or under it. Winter months were very cold and we always had plenty of snowfall. At night, it was so cold that very often I was forced to wrap my mother's chador, a large cloth worn as a combination head covering, veil and shawl, around me. My mother used to wrap her headscarf securely around my head so that, in her own words, freezing air does not enter my ears. Our clothes were inadequate for the winter months, and we often spent the night shivering in the cold, and you could even hear my teeth chattering." My mother used to give me some dried food, such as cooked dried turnips, which were as hard as stone. Eating those dried turnips used to take half a day. My childhood years were tough, particularly the winter months. My sister, my brothers and I used to eat baked potatoes during winter. I remember my father buying a knee-high Wellington boot to cope with all the snow, but this was of little use, since snow was up to our chest. The rubber Wellington boots made little difference in such heavy snowfall. I also remember the heater in our classroom at school. We all used to huddle around the heater, absorbing as much heat as we could in the freezing weather. At home too, the heat from my mother's cooking stove used to attract all the children around the stove. My father was very religious. He used to pray five times a day. He used to pray as soon as the muazzin summoned the faithful to prayer from the minaret of the local mosque. In those days, relatively few people prayed five times a day, but my father was a strict observer of prayers. His knowledge of stars and astronomy told him when to pray at dawn. His noon or midday prayer was judged from the length of shadows on the ground. He also believed in halal and haram, meaning everything that is allowed or in compliance with Islamic law, and everything that is unacceptable or illegal under Islamic law, respectively. Thus, I am proud to say that throughout my father's life, not a single haram item, which means illegal under Islamic law, entered into our household, and that is quite remarkable. General Soleimani recounts in his memoirs that his father owned a rather fierce and ill-tempered bull, which everybody tried to avoid, fearing his rather sharp horns. But in his memoirs he says, "One day, when I was 10 years old, during the summer months and school holidays, I mounted this fierce beast, this ill-tempered bull, and travelled a full 15 kilometres, about 9 miles, to a neighbouring village where my paternal aunt used to live. The difficult-to-control and stubborn bull repeatedly hit my legs with his head during the 9-mile journey through the desert, but nonetheless, I arrived in good health and uninjured at my auntie's house, proud of my achievement as a 10-year-old child. Thus, even as a child, Qasem Soleimani was fearless and courageous to an amazing degree. As a small child, Qasem Soleimani contracted rubella, but he managed to survive this illness. He had a nomadic childhood, with his family moving and relocating every 6 months as winter and summer approached. Qasem Soleimani finished his years of primary schooling in his home village of Qanat Malek, but when, as a child, he used to help out his father on the family farm. Family was very important to Qasem. At the age of 13, the young Qasem travelled to the nearby city of Kerman to help his family pay off an agricultural debt. His father owed this debt to a local bank. Worried that his father might go to jail if he was unable to pay his bank loan, Qasem sought work in the city of Kerman. His small stature meant that many employers were unwilling to offer him any work, but eventually he became a simple construction labourer on a building site. After some time working as a construction worker, he managed to find work in a hotel and saved all his wages for 5 months, which amounted to 1,000 tumans, or 10,000 rials, sending his entire earnings to his father to pay off his bank loan. Qasem's first trip to the city of Kerman lasted 9 months. During his second trip to Kerman, he started lifting weights in his spare time and attended a traditional Iranian gymnasium known as Zurkhane and started bodybuilding. In 1976, just 2 years before the Islamic Revolution, with the encouragement of his friend Ahmad, he started to regularly attend the Qaim Mosque in the city of Kerman, a local mosque where Quranic classes were taught by Mr. Haqiqi. These Quranic classes had a profound effect on the young Qasem Soleimani. He later moved on to a job at the City of Kerman Water Board and got into lifting weights in his spare time. With the victory of the Islamic Revolution in February of 1979, he joined a unit of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, and received his formal military training. Just after the Islamic Revolution, he became acquainted with a cleric from the city of Mashhad named Reza Kamyab, who spurred him to revolutionary activities. Even though the cleric Reza Kamyab was martyred by MKO terrorists in 1981, and Qasem Soleimani's friendship with Kamyab only lasted for just 2 years, nonetheless, Kamyab's revolutionary sermons kindled the spirit of the Islamic Revolution within the young Qasem, and it also led to another friendship with another cleric from the same city of Mashhad, whose name was Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Qasem Soleimani's brother, Sohrab Soleimani, commented on his teenage years in Kerman by saying, "My brother Qasem wanted to help out with the family's financial difficulties, and so, as a 13-year-old teenager, he went to Kerman to find work. He loved his parents so much that as soon as he got the opportunity, he visited the family home in Qanat Malek village and kissed the faces of both his mum and dad, and was very respectful towards them. He genuinely believed that the Almighty had given him the opportunity to serve Islam and Muslims and the downtrodden in this world precisely because of the love, religious beliefs and prayers of his parents. Through intellect, courage, perspicacity and an absolute faith in Islam, Qasem Soleimani rose to become the second most powerful man within the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, the top commander of Iran's elite Quds Force, and one of the most powerful military and political figures within the West Asia region. The vicissitudes of Qasem Soleimani's life are well worth studying, and he is truly a role model for young Muslims and freedom-seeking peoples of the world everywhere.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone. On the eve of the new year of the Gregorian calendar, we present you an interesting saying regarding Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him, from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As related by his divinely designated vicegerent, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. The messenger of Allah called me and said, O Ali, verily there is a similarity between you and Jesus, the son of Mary, peace be upon him. The Christians love him so much that they put him in a position that was not for him. And the Jews hate him so much that they even slandered his mother. Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, added, Two groups of men will be ruined because of me. He who goes to extremes in love of me for what I do not have, and he who hates me with a hatred that makes him slander me.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the importance of lawful sustenance. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Earning lawful or halal sustenance is essential for a believer. Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam said, Do not quit seeking for lawful sustenance. Do your best and have reliance on Allah. Answering one of his companions who had objected to his going out on the hot day for sustenance, the Imam said, I go out for sustenance so that I should be independent of people. On a similar occasion, the Imam said, I like suffering from the heat of the sun for sustenance. On a similar, occasion, he says, Leave me. I like Allah to see me working with my hands and seeking for a lawful or halal sustenance with suffering. Look, brothers and sisters, how Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam is promoting working hard to earn a lawful sustenance. Unfortunately, at times we are unaware of the ultimate relief that Allah has embedded in exerting for lawful or halal sustenance. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, if it comes about that you knew the ultimate relief would come the next day, you should never give up going out for sustenance. It is a duty of a believer to provide for his family and dependents. The Imam also said, the reward of him who toils on behalf of his household is like the reward of him who does jihad for the sake of Allah. This is how much Islam appreciates and encourages for the believer men to go out and, you know, take the pain to earn that sustenance and livelihood for their families. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the importance of lawful or halal sustenance. Getting involved in busyness is in an attempt to earn halal sustenance is much encouraged by the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam. Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam, the sixth divinely appointed Imam, said, do not give up busyness so that you might be abased. Do business and Allah will bless you. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam also said, do not give up busyness, ask for the bounty of Allah. How comprehensive and precise this saying is. Allah provides sustenance to everyone, but there is a category who will be granted the sustenance Allah has reserved for him. Who are they? Look at this narration again by Imam Sadiq alayhi salam and we will get the answer of who these people are for whom Allah provides sustenance, you know, that is reserved for them. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, the prayers of him who quits seeking for sustenance will not be granted. Having misunderstood the purport of the revelation which says, and whoever is careful of his duty to Allah, he will make for him an outlet and give him sustenance from whence he thinks not. A group of the Prophet's companions left their jobs and devoted themselves to, quote-unquote, worship, saying, our needs will be met. When their news reached the Prophet, he sent for them to interrogate them, you know, about their action. They told him that Allah had guaranteed their sustenance. Now, look at the response of the Prophet of Allah. The Prophet said, the supplication of those who do like this will not be granted. Keep on having endeavor. So, brothers and sisters, if you do not seriously seek your sustenance, you do not work on purpose, you do not look for a job, you do not try to earn your livelihood, then according to the narrations of Prophet and Ahlul Bayt, your prayers and worships are not going to be accepted. You have to try to earn your livelihood and sustenance, you know, of course, through halal means, and the sustenance has to be halal as well.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Part 1.
He was born in a village in the heart of the desert. At the age of 5, he became a shepherd in the village.
a young shepherd who grazed sheep with his bare feet, and at night his mother would remove the thorns off his hands and feet with a needle. During the entire fall and winter, he worked hard and his hands were frostbitten due to severe cold. Every time the teacher hit him on the back of his hands with a piece of wet branch from pomegranate tree, and he would start crying out loud, his father would shout from the yard in his house, "Don't hit him. Have a little fairness. Qasem's hands are not dirty. His skin has become black." And as far as he could remember, he was always waiting for the spring to come to bring warmth with it. Even though his hands never fired a bullet, they prevented many hands from shedding the blood of innocent people. And after he fell, people in the world didn't shake hands warmly for a long time. A man with a bright future, with a stature to stand tall. When he was 13, he learned about the secret of his parents' whispers at night. He found out that his dad owed 900 tomans to the agricultural bank and could not repay it. He decided to drop out of school and go to the city to find a job and lend it to his father. It was the first time he was shouldering a big responsibility, and he succeeded. At the age of 15, he enrolled in the Kerman Workers Club in the field of karate. On his card, it was written, "Become strong if you want comfort in this world, because in the system of nature, those who are weak will be trampled upon." This became the motto in his life. He had to make his shoulders stronger for bigger responsibilities. When the revolution happened, he wanted to be an IRGC soldier, but with his wavy hair and his short-sleeved shirt, and with his chest and arms revealing, his appearance didn't fit in with the people in the IRGC. That's why he was rejected by the selection committee of the IRGC. But he insisted, and it worked. Qasem became an IRGC guard. It was in his fate that his right hand was injured. It happened on the first day of the first operation he participated in. So he could no longer fire a bullet with that hand. But because of his experience in military affairs and his ability to lead forces, he remained on the front lines. Although he was a military commander, he made friends with each and every one of his forces and established personal and emotional relationships with them. In the first opportunity, he went to Mecca. After that, everyone knew him by the title Haj Qasem. During the 8 years of the Iraqi-imposed war, he fought in different places. Rivers, deserts, wetlands, and mountains. In his conversation on the radio, he would never say go.
He would say, "Come here." Whenever the situation would become hard, he showed his grandeur, and no one would dare oppose him. Everyone knew that if Qasim raised his right eyebrow, there would be no room for ifs or buts, and no one could say no. He was always behind the first embankment during the operations. During the 8 years that Qasim and Iranian forces were fighting with Saddam's army on the country's western borders, the drug mafia had invaded Iran's eastern and southeastern provinces bordering Afghanistan and Pakistan. So the IRGC commissioned a base to fight the mafia, the Quds base. And Qasim became the commander of the base, where the forces of his division were all from those provinces. Qasim's new mission was harder than the war. The drug mafia had hired mainly the oppressed and indigenous people of different villages of the provinces, and the difficulty of Qasim's mission was that he had to clear these provinces with maximum peace and minimum human casualties. Although the heads of the mafia groups tried to put Qasim in a tight spot by threatening him, he did his job fearlessly. He was close to death many times, and once his children were almost taken hostage. Once armed thugs took 90 police forces hostage and took him deep into Pakistani territory, Qasim followed them on a helicopter, and after finding their hideout, he got them released. Now the mafia heads knew that they were not safe from Qasim even across the border. He warned the rest of the miscreant gangs to either lay down their arms or wait for the consequences of their evil acts. Now, once again, it was time for forgiveness and kindness. Qasim tried to build an honorable life for the tribes through agriculture by building hundreds of water wells. He did not even neglect to take care of the family of the head of one of the most notorious armed gangs who was killed by his forces. So Qasim succeeded in restoring security to the southern and eastern provinces of Iran after 7 years, with the least casualties. But this was not the end of his mission. February 1998, Qasim was appointed as commander of the Quds force. The unit was responsible for the IRGC's foreign operations from Afghanistan to Lebanon. What was the mystery in the name that was tied to Qasim's life? Starting military training from the Quds garrison in Kerman, commanding the battle in Operation Tariq al-Quds, fighting the drug mafia in the Quds base, and now commanding the Quds force. There were many such codes in Qasim's life. Most importantly, his right hand, he could not shoot with. The beginning of Qasim's new mission coincided with the beginning of the construction of U.S. bases in Iran's neighboring countries. Al-Qaeda also infiltrated the region and sowed the seeds of religious discord. Qasem had to do something. He first flew on a helicopter through the mountains of Tajikistan to go visit Ahmad Shah Massoud. The Sunni lion of the Panjshir Valley, who had been in isolation for some time. Qasem saved Massoud from isolation by strengthening his fighting power and supporting his forces. We do not even want to discuss what it means to transfer heavy military equipment to Afghanistan in just 48 hours. Qasem's next step was to connect the nucleus of resistance to other parts of his mission. Destination was the Iraqi Kurdistan, Iran's traditional ally. There, he strengthened his ties with the leaders of the region, as he did in Afghanistan. Training and sending military equipment and tools deepened Qasem's relationship with the Kurds. Qasem's next step was to go to Lebanon. And it was there that he found what he was looking for. Imad Mughniyeh, an omnipotent commander like himself. And Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, who was a strategist, a political theoretician who was aware of the equations of the region and the world, and at the same time, a full-fledged warrior. Those two men encouraged Qasem, the companions who never separated from him, and only death left a gap between them. It was not long after Haj Qasem, Imad, and Sayyid got to know each other that the Israeli army withdrew from Lebanon after 18 years of occupation without achieving anything. Six years later, the small Hezbollah became so strong that Israel decided to eradicate it with a massive offensive. Qasem wasn't someone who would sit by and just watch the battle from a distance. Weeks after the start of the war, Israel did everything it could by massacring the people and destroying infrastructure to force Lebanon to concede defeat. In the victory celebration, only a few people knew that someone named Imad Mughniyeh existed. The specter of resistance had a quote-unquote strong supporter throughout the war.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The frequency of gun violence in the United States has prompted authorities to refer to it as an epidemic. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Sputnik News Agency has covered this story and tells us more. A reporter said gun violence in the United States has taken the lives of more than 42,300 people in 2023, emphasizing that Americans use guns mostly to commit suicide, followed by homicide, self-defense, and unintentional shootings. The figures published by the nonprofit organization Gun Violence Archive on Tuesday, 26th of December, it also said, there have been 18,541 cases of other gun-related deaths, of which more than 650 incidents were related to mass shootings, while others involved 40 mass murders, 1,161 defensive use cases, and 1,543 unintentional shootings. 23,760 suicide cases were also registered in the United States. It said more than 1,600 children between the ages of 0 and 17 were killed in gun violence incidents and 4,444 others were injured. Furthermore, the report noted that 46 law enforcement officers were killed in gun violence incidents and 1,412 suspects were killed in officer-involved cases. The watchdog tracks gun violence incidents using law enforcement, media, governmental, and commercial sources. In the meantime, the frequency of gun violence in the United States has prompted authorities to refer to it as a national epidemic. There have been more than 600 mass shootings, averaging almost two a day, in the United States since 2019. Democratic U.S. President Joe Biden has called on Congress to address the issue, urging lawmakers to ban assault weapons. However, Republicans are staunch promoters of U.S. gun culture and adamantly adhere to the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, the right to bear arms, opposing strict bans on guns. A Gallup opinion poll from October of 2022 showed that the majority of Americans are in favor of gun control, saying they want stricter laws for the sale of firearms. There are an estimated 393 million civilian-owned firearms in the United States. Approximately one-third of the adult population in the United States, which equates to 82,880,000 people, own at least one firearm.